This is episode 131 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, Interventions for Fall Risk Prevention in Nursing Homes. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. Hello out there and welcome back to this episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
Glad to have you. This Sunday, September 22nd, is Fall Prevention Awareness Day. So we wanted to have an episode dedicated to preventing falls in the long-term care setting. And we don't do that by ourselves. We have a guest, Dr. Pat Quigley, to talk about that.
And Dr. Quigley has a very impressive resume. This is what she does. Like, when it comes to fall assessments and fall risk assessments and fall preventions, she is the go-to expert on this. She's both a clinical nurse specialist and a nurse practitioner in rehabilitation. As associate chief of nursing for research, she was a funded researcher with the Research Center of Excellence, and her contributions to patient safety, nursing, and rehabilitation are evident at a national level, with emphasis on clinical practice innovations designed to promote elders' independence and safety. Independence and safety in the context of reducing falls but still being able to live their lives. And she's nationally known for her program of research in patient safety, particularly in fall prevention. The Falls Program Research Agenda continues to drive research efforts across health services and rehabilitation researchers.
Dr. Pat, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much.
All right. Well, Will and I are very pleased that you could make it on for this topic. I know that in our general practice, injuries resulting from falls constitute a high proportion of the cases that we have. So being able to have an episode dedicated to talking about interventions for fall risk and fall prevention is very important to us. So we're glad to have you on. Just from like a general standpoint, you know, from the standpoint of a nursing home resident versus just the average senior citizen that is not in a long-term care, what are some of the common factors that would place a nursing home resident at risk for falls just to begin with?
Well, you know, I'm so delighted, Will and Rob, that you have taken on this topic as a priority for a conversation. Because, you know, this is so my world, because as a nurse in my work, I am doing all that I can to reduce preventable falls and injuries from falls. And long-term care facilities, residents in long-term care, is such a special population for me because they're so vulnerable. So when you think about the patient population, just by virtue of entering into long-term care, these are people who have all kinds of different medical diseases and medications on board and frailty and functional limitations coming in for long-term care or maybe chronic care. And just by virtue of the chronic state that they're in, or maybe the acute care state in a hospital that resulted in long-term care, they're more at risk for falling. Sometimes patients who have come into long-term care and become residents, these are individuals, Will and Rob, who have already been falling. They've already experienced repeat falls. And I think it's so important from the big picture to be able to help everyone appreciate who's listening today that unintentional injuries are estimated to be the fifth leading cause of death in older people. And falls accounts for like 2/3 of those deaths.
Wow.
And in long-term care, we have people that are really frail and old, and you've got a population of individuals living there that are over the age of 85. And, you know, falls is the leading cause of unintentional injury death in people over the age of 85. So in long-term care, the nursing homes, the rates are like twice as high as they are even in the community. People are falling more than once in a year. So when you think about people who are repeat fallers, they're so at risk for injury. So I'm so glad you're targeting injury. So part of what happens is that after these falls, there's less survival, and, you know, there's a financial burden associated with it. And, you know, there's even some trends now that there's more spinal cord injury happening in older people because of falls. So I think it's important for, again, everyone who's listening and family members to realize that the Joint Commission has had a goal on patient safety for fall prevention and long-term care since at least 2015, that we need to find out which residents are more likely to fall and to take some action. So it's really important that you did ask about the fall risk factors. It's really complex. It's not simple. When you think about as we, each and every one of us, grow old gracefully each day, There are things that happen in our bodies. Our bodies change, but there's also disease states that we have. So when you think of risk factors, certainly muscle weakness, gait deficits, problems with vision, changes in cognition, functional impairment. And then there's other changes that occur, other risk factors that start getting more complex. Blood pressure is dropping and people have orthostatic hypotension. Urinary incontinence is a huge problem in long-term care residents. Mm-hmm. The medications that they're taking, medications to help them, maybe even be able to adjust, you know, to long-term care. It's a whole new setting, and there's depression that goes on. Maybe they're anxious. So some of the medications that treat behaviors and depression, anxiety, are risk factors for falling. And, you know, there's even some of the disease states that patients have. Patients who have maybe Parkinson's disease or Parkinson's-like mm-hmm. symptoms where they have a shuffling gait.
Yeah.
That increases their risk for falls. So it is so complex, Bill and Rob, when you think about all the risk factors that a person can present with. And then on top of that, there's the risk factors associated with injury. So you have residents in long-term care who maybe have already had a fracture, so they've got a history of fall-related injuries already. They've got osteoporosis. Maybe they're anticoagulated. So there's just a host of fall risk factors that people live with, but also injury risk factors that make them even more vulnerable.
Yeah. And how and what are fall risks assessments, and how do they flush out these different factors? And how are they performed?
Well, that's such a great follow-up question because, as I mentioned, in terms of the Joint Commission's goal is we want to be able to identify what are those risk factors and get them treated, and which mm-hmm. residents are more at risk than others.
Yeah.
So, you know, to everyone who's listening today, your loved one actually gets screened before they get accepted into a long-term care facility. So part of that screening for admission includes fall risk assessment to begin with. They're going to start looking at medications that can contribute to fall risk, issues maybe surrounding vision, low vision problems, maybe depth perception problems that an older resident or older person has. They'll start looking at muscle weakness, incontinence. They even will start screening for a prior hip fracture. They will know whether or not your loved one was admitted because of a fall. Maybe they got admitted to the hospital because of a fall that resulted in a hip fracture. Now they're coming into the nursing home. So you can rest assured that before someone even gets admitted into long-term care, that they have been screened for fall risk factors. You know what? Everyone who comes into long-term care is at high fall risk. So we don't even have to talk about that anymore. We're always trying to get at what their risk factors are. So when indeed an individual gets admitted into long-term care, there's some data that is collected that's required by CMS, and part of that is the fall risk factors, the variables that I just actually, the indicators that I just mentioned to you. But there's also screening scales that the clinical staff will use, the nursing home registered nurses and licensed practical nurses who are helping with the admission process. So they'll start asking about fall history. They'll start looking at the actual medications that make someone at risk for falls. They'll look at trouble for being able or difficulties being able to transfer, to stand up, to be able to walk, cognitive status, the mental status. So there's different tools that are out there to be able to start that screening process. But the entire intent is to get to the actual fall risk factors because it's more than a score or indicating that someone is high fall risk. Everybody's high fall risk to be admitted into long-term care, so we don't even have to talk about that. What we want to talk about are fall risk factors. And then there are individuals, of course, that get admitted for rehabilitation. Maybe subacute rehabilitation or a little bit more intensive rehabilitation of long-term care, and those residents will also get evaluated by physical therapy, occupational therapy, and in those evaluations, they will do, each of the therapists will do a more in-depth evaluation of someone's fall risk. So physical therapists will maybe look to see what, they will assess someone's strength, their muscle strength in their legs, their arms, their hands, their reflexes. They'll look at range of motion if someone has any pain. They'll do a balance assessment, a gait assessment. I just want you to hear how comprehensive this is.
Yeah.
In occupational therapy, they will evaluate someone's perceptions of their activities of daily living. How well can they perform their bathing, their dressing, how well they could feed themselves, even some of the transfers to and from the bathroom. All the things that they will do with their upper extremities in terms of being able to manage their own personal needs, activities of daily living. They also get into cognition, how maybe the issues surrounding cognitive impairment. So it's very complex, the evaluations that are done by the rest of the interdisciplinary team. If you happen to have a resident who has problems with their speech or swallowing, maybe being able to put, to combine different kinds of skill sets to be able to dress themselves, they may even see speech therapy. So all together, working with the entire team, nurses, the therapists, will complete a comprehensive fall risk assessment. And that fall risk assessment will result into a care plan. But I just want you to hear how complex this can be. You know, what's also really unique to the long-term care of the resident population is people don't come into long-term care having only one fall risk factor. So it's really important to appreciate that it's very complex. There's a lot of fall risk factors. So I think it's really important for everyone listening, that if your loved ones who have family members in long-term care, is to know what those fall risk factors are, to learn about them, and be part of the process for helping to implement plans of care to be able to reduce these fall risk factors. Because that's what it's about. To be able to mitigate and eliminate these risk factors.
Right. It's refreshing that you said that. Like, if a medical doctor signed off on you going to a nursing home, you are automatically a fall risk. Because, I mean, as you know, that doesn't happen in every nursing home. It doesn't happen in every nursing home assessment. Sometimes people are, that should be marketed as a fall risk or not.
I've always thought that it was incredibly absurd and just risky from a business standpoint to have somebody who is listed as a low fall risk. Like, why even take that chance? Just everybody's a high fall risk.
Agreed.
You know, that is such a good point, and that happens in hospitals as well, because there's this over-reliance on screening tools to identify the likelihood of someone falling again.
Yes.
But I can tell you, all the national directives in today's world, actually since probably 2015, has been to go away from the screening scales that just reduce someone to a category of risk, low, moderate, or high, or to a score, but to identify what the actual fall risk factors are for that one person. Because my fall risk factors could be different than yours, Will, could be different than yours, Rob. But we all three could be high fall risk. So what's important with getting to individualized care planning is to know what someone's fall risk factors are and how can we align interventions to be able to help reduce those risk factors.
Because
when you reduce the risk, you improve function and gait and balance and the likelihood of someone not falling.
And that's what we wanted to move into is once you do that, how does a care plan change? Because I guess at the end of the day, that's kind of what the goal is setting up a care plan.
Well, actually, the goal is to be able to mitigate and eliminate the risk or to, reduce the complications that are associated with someone's disease state when they come in, to increase their function. So that's part of what rehabilitation is. But there's some patients where maybe their prognosis for increasing function might be limited, so you still want to help prevent complications from occurring. So, for example, someone who comes in with a stroke, they maybe had a stroke on the right side of their brain and their left side of their body is weak. With that kind of a patient, what we're going to do is we're going to make sure that patient, we already know, has problems with mobility, is going to have trouble with transfers. So we're going to make sure with someone like that that they're going to have a safe exit site set up in their room where that patient's resident is always getting out of bed towards the right side, never towards their side that is weak. that resident is always is instructed with all the steps that we're going to do before we get started, because that person has some trouble with safety awareness.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything we're going to do is setting up, number one, the safe environment. You know, most of the falls that happen in long-term care are happening in the bedroom or happening in the bathroom. People are trying to get up out of bed without us. They're trying to get back into bed without us. They're trying to get to the bathroom. Or, as I mentioned, they're falling in the bathroom. So the first thing that we want to do is to set up a safe environment to make sure that that room is individualized for the safe transfers and mobility of the resident. Now, oftentimes in long-term care, we're doing all that we can to make that environment as home-like as possible. But safety has to trump making it home life. So if you have someone who needs to have their left side of the bed against the wall, we got to do that. You know, We got to make sure that they only get up out of bed towards the right side. So setting up a safe environment, looking at their clothing, making sure they're wearing their shoes. If you have people who have trouble being able to feel their feet, they've got to wear their shoes and have proper shoes on. Creating that safe environment, making sure that their clothing is properly fitting, the pant legs aren't too long, their shoes are properly fitting. Those are all things that nurses are going to start doing, creating that safe environment, and then getting a toileting schedule going. Because people get up to go to the bathroom without us. You know, no one wants to have an accident. So hardwiring a toileting schedule is really important. Once the therapists have gotten involved and we start getting them into an exercise program, I can tell you, Will and Rob, that exercise is the leading intervention to help someone maintain their function, be able to maybe increase their strength and their balance, which we all want, because no one loses anything as fast as they do it when they're immobile or not active, as they lose their strength. So that's the leading intervention, is to get people into exercise programs. So we're going to follow that exercise program and work with physical therapy, occupational therapy. Everybody's going to work together to improve our residents, each and every resident's function. And if there is a resident who's maybe not enrolled in physical therapy and occupational therapy, we're going to make sure that resident's enrolled in restorative care. Everybody gets restorative care. Keeping people active. Making sure that if they've been cleared with their mobility aid and they can walk with their two-wheeled walker, that you know they have it within reach and they can get up and they can go walking. Then we also still want to do that assessment, because you can have residents coming into long-term care and have medications that are being modified. So if we have some medications that are being modified because maybe their blood pressure is a little too high and we want to get that blood pressure down, then they could have some side effect of those medications, maybe some postural hypotension, which is when the blood pressure drops when people start getting up and start walking. So we always want to make sure the nursing staff is assessing the patient for any changes in medications, any side effects, any kind of complications that are going on. Maybe even if you have someone having some increased delirium, it could be a sign of more confusion, maybe some problems with not having enough fluid, enough nutrition, even issues surrounding low blood sugar,
right,
or that urinary tract infection. So we're always doing that assessment. But indeed, the care plan, the intervention should be aligned to the risk factor. So the care plan gets started right away when people come together for their first interdisciplinary assessment that they do with the resident and the family. The resident is always included. The family is always included in having that initial care plan to go over what did we find and what are we going to do to work together to help keep you safe while you're in the long-term care facility with
right.
us.
Right. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you're good. I was just going to say, it's interesting that you say that. We've had other guests on at previous points to talk about different components of fall prevention. And I feel like the overarching theme is, just as you had said it, that physical therapy and the ability to move and get strong is one of the most important factors in preventing falls, making sure that people can have mobility and can move and get their strength.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the leading exercise. It's for everyone. If you were going to have just one single intervention, it would be exercise.
Yeah.
And then, of course, with the long-term care residents, you know, making sure that they can see. So vision is really important. I don't know that we've mentioned that already, but certainly if they've got impaired vision, everyone's got to make sure they have their glasses. And if they haven't had a recent eye exam, someone should get that done, you know, so that they can have proper vision. Because it's a different environment. getting that incontinence treated, because 25% of the falls that happen in long-term care are linked to trying to get to the bathroom, residents trying to get to the bathroom, because as I mentioned, no one wants to have an accident. So I think that's one of the most important things for everybody working together, the team, the family, is making sure some people get toileted properly. And then I would say that probably physicians would say, after exercise being number one, is that certainly medication reviews are number two. You know, that we don't always have a physician in long-term care. They will come and they always supervise care, but there's nurse practitioners there. And nurse practitioners are reviewing those medications, you know, looking at maybe some psychotropic meds to deal with someone's anxiety, that those could be changed or modified, or their anxiety medications, depression medications, and see what changes we can make to medication.
You said it.
What are the common interventions that they're using now? Like, are there still these pressure pads, the alarms, or
where are they moving in term, aside from physical therapy, aside from what you mentioned, like actual devices for fall prevention?
Well, thank you for asking about that, because it's part of the toolkit and helping to keep people safe. You know, the beds are usually kept in a low bed position. That's something that sometimes needs to be reconsidered, because the low bed position is really only designed to reduce trauma when patients fall from bed. So bed heights have to still be individualized. So if someone's is going to be helped to stand up or transfer and they're 6 foot 4 inches tall, someone has to raise the height of that bed up to the proper height for someone to be assisted to stand or transfer, and that's very different than someone who's 5'2". So, you know, height-adjusting furniture, whether it's the bedside commode, or putting a bedside commode over the toilet is important. Then there's other technology that you're starting to mention that helps to alert the nursing staff if a patient's starting to get up. So, you know, bed alarms have, for the most part, been reconsidered in their use in long-term care, because it's now considered a restraint. I think it's in 2015 that CMS determined that bed alarms were a restraint. So if a bed alarm is being used solely as the only intervention for preventing someone from getting up and falling, then there would need to be an order for that. So there is an assessment that gets completed by the nursing staff when a resident gets admitted, to determine the need for, you know, whether it's bed rails or a bed alarm. But, you know, it's part of the toolkit. So if you have someone who is really impulsive and is very, very agitated, then that's something that should be in place. But there's different ways of being able to use an alarm. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily sound. You could have an alarm that is linked to the call light system. So there's different technology that can be used. There's also the seated pressure pads that could be on a chair. So there's different levels of sensitivity for the alarm, whether it's a chair alarm or a bed alarm. So it can be set at a level of sensitivity where it starts to make noise and set off an alarm just when someone's moving, or it can be set to a lower level of sensitivity where the alarm doesn't go off until someone has actually exited the bed or up from the chair. Yeah. Which doesn't quite frankly help, because someone has already fallen by the time you get there. And that's one of the major issues with alarms is, you know, by the time someone gets there, someone's already found down. Mm-hmm. So there's other ways to be able to keep eyes on patients. There's new technology, that's telesitter technology, virtual technology to keep eyes on patients in long-term care, where you don't have alarms, you don't have to have sitters. You can have someone watching from a distance through a camera, and they can still say, "Pat, wait a second, I can see you're starting to get up. I've got a nurse on the way, one of the staff's on the way." So there's other technology that's out there to help someone not fall. But, you know, I love other strategies, too. You know, there's different kinds of mattresses. Not everyone needs to be the same kind of a mattress. You can get a concave mattress where you have a lip that comes up at the side of the mattress, and it helps the older person to know that this is the edge of the bed. Or I love long body pillows to put on the sides of the bed to help people. They're very comfortable for residents, to help the resident know that this is the edge of the bed. And then, of course, you know, checking on people more frequently, because there's some residents who need to be checked on more frequently than others.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense. In terms of the body pillows and the curved mattresses, I feel like there is a an aspect of the nursing home itself has got to consider preventing the falls versus it being a form of restraint. So that's probably an issue that you have to walk. You know,
it's the same thing with wheelchairs. You know, not every resident should be in the same wheelchair. Usually you have these depot wheelchairs and everybody's in that kind of a wheelchair. But if you have someone that's really, really tall, like I've mentioned, my 6'4" person, you know, and has trouble being able to keep themselves vertical. You know, they've got trouble with sitting balance and they do a lot of leaning. You know, just propping them up on pillows isn't going to be enough, because we haven't talked about falls from wheelchairs, but, you know, the incidence and prevalence of falls from wheelchairs is not known. Well, we know that because it gets recorded now, you know, if someone's had more than one fall in the last 90 days, and they're going to go ahead and count the number of falls. So falls, there's more reliable data on falls in the nursing home and where people are falling, but not so much from wheelchairs. So even, you know, family members, I think, need to really help with this as well. Is, you know, we all want to keep someone, if they're in a wheelchair, in that wheelchair and keep them safe, because falls from wheelchairs are terrible. People fall and they hit their head. Maybe the wheelchair falls with them. So it's not just falls while walking or getting up from a bed. It's also falls from chairs, and especially wheelchairs, because of how they're positioned and seated in them.
Well, Pat, this has been a whirlwind of an episode. I can't, this 30 minutes has flown by.
Well, you're so kind. Well, I just have a couple more comments if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because, you know, my world is protecting people from injuries when they fall, because they're, you know, people are going to fall and they're going to get up. You can't prevent all falls. And I do believe in long-term care. There's so much great work that's going on to keep residents safe. But, you know, what we want to do is to protect people from these serious injuries, because injuries are result in loss of functional loss of life. So older people don't even have to have a head strike to end up having a delayed onset subdural. They're bleeding in the head. So just sometimes the velocity of a fall, even from a low bed position, can result in micro tears around the brain and they can bleed. So my world of research is helping to implement floor mats at the bedside to reduce trauma. They can from when someone falls. So floor mats work, floor mats work, floor mats work. You know, you can use floor mats in front of chairs. That science has been published, and we use hip protectors. So my legacy is in the Department of Veterans Affairs, and our goal was to make sure that we protect our veterans who've borne the battle from us and others to be free from not breaking a hip. Because hip fractures are grave. You know, there's current research where 37% of older residents who fall and break hips in long-term care die within 6 months. They become totally dependent in activities of daily living. So I want family members on the call. I want nursing home administrators and staff to go after using hip protectors on people with osteoporosis or hip fracture and get those floor mats at the bedside, because we can't replace all the flooring, but we can protect people when they fall from the amount of trauma.
Exactly.
And that's what floor mats do.
Exactly.
So thank you for just a couple more minutes to be able to go after protecting people from injuries, because that's what it's about.
No, we appreciate
it. Saving lives.
No, that's fantastic, Pat, all the work that you do. We really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing that knowledge with us and our audience.
Truly my pleasure. Absolutely. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
That was, in fact, a whirlwind.
Yeah. She is very
passionate.
It's always interesting to talk to somebody that's, like she said, I mean, that's her bread and butter. That's her whole life. This is the research that she does. She has dedicated her entire academic, professional, and clinical career to this subject, which is extremely important because, as she said, the vast majority of senior citizens are being injured through falls. It is an enormous problem as we get older. Gravity becomes less and less of a friend.
That's right. And again, just to point out, we talked about this at the top of the episode, but Sunday is Fall Prevention Awareness Day. Mm-hmm. And in honor of Fall Prevention Awareness Day, not only did we dedicate this episode of the Nursing Obese Podcast to fall prevention, but when we return in 2 weeks, which will be September 30th, we're also going to have another episode dedicated to preventing nursing home falls. We're going to have Dr. Mindy Renfro on the episode. But that's, again, in honor of September 22nd being Fall Prevention Awareness Day. And I guess that's going to conclude this particular episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. You can consume each and every episode, new episodes every other week, on Stitcher, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast from.
You can go to YouTube, and if you do, make sure you click subscribe and like. You can go to our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com.
And check us out there. And with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.